Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Brant Courtwright. He is author of The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, Upgrade Your Brain and Upgrade Your Life. The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle is aimed at improving how your brain functions. Your rate of neurogenesis may be the most important factor in your brain health, and increasing your rate of neurogenesis by 3 to 5 times can result in powerfully improved memory, learning, cognitive enhancement, as well as improved immunity and protection against stress and depression. Brant Courtwright is a highly respected clinical psychologist and professor of psychology at California Institute of Integral Studies. His consulting practice specializes in cutting-edge brain health and neuroscience-informed depth therapy. You can find out more by visiting his website, BrantCourtwright.com. And also, he has a website strictly for the book called NeurogenesisDiet.com. And I do have direct link to both websites in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Brant to the show. Good day, Brant.
Good afternoon.
I am all set to upgrade. I want Robert 2.0 brain started to, maybe 3.0 by the end of the show. But to me this is a fascinating subject. I love learning new things about how we can improve our lives. Probably the best place to start is explaining what neurogenesis is actually.
Good. So neurogenesis is the process of making new brain cells. So it used to be thought up until the late 1990s that the brain stopped growing once we were in our early 20s. And after that, it was just one slow slide into decrepitude. But then they discovered that actually the brain makes new brain cells throughout our entire life. Well, at first they didn't know what to make of this. They thought, okay, well, first we thought we didn't make new brain cells. Now we found out we do, but so what? Well, just recently it's been discovered that our rate of neurogenesis, the rate at which we make new brain cells, is hugely important for the health of our brain and hugely important for the quality of our life. And that just about everybody in the world is suffering, really, with lower than optimal rates of neurogenesis. That there's so much that is neurotoxic in the world that just about everybody has a slower rate of neurogenesis than they need to. And most people can increase their rate of neurogenesis by 3 to 5 times. Actually, if you're in your 20s or 30s, or even 40s or 50s, even 60s, you can increase it 5 times. And in old age, you can increase it 3 to 5 times with quite profound effects upon your life and your functioning.
Wow. Well, I'm glad I'm still in that 5% possibility, or 5 times possibility range. So, this is such a shift, because, I remember, it just seemed like that was, the basic fact was that, once you have these certain number of brain cells, that's it. And of course, there was always the discussion of how some unhealthy habits, that destroy brain cells, like drinking or taking drugs or that kind of thing, basically kind of just cuts away those brain cells, and once they're gone, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a huge revolution in neuroscience. And actually, again, the impact of this, what this actually means for health and for the brain and for the possibilities of living for all of us, has only just become clear in the last few years. This is so new, almost nobody even knows about this. This has been confined mostly to neuroscience journals, neuroscientists talking to other neuroscientists. And, you know, I've been a psychologist for most of my life, and I've always maintained that psychology is much too important to be left just a psychologist. Everybody needs to know about it. And it's the same with neuroscience. Neuroscience is much too important to be left to the neuroscientists. We all need to know this information.
Yeah, well, I agree. You know, I mean, it's, you know, the idea that, you know, you can generate new brain cells, you know, and that you're not, you're not stuck in, you know, kind of what you have, and that there are certain lifestyle and dietary actions that you can take to improve that. To me, that's just, you know, that's amazing. You know, how, you know, to me, it's like, what kind of led to this discovery? I mean, you know, when you think about, you know, yeah. I mean, I know they've been studying brain, you know, the brain functioning and all that kind of thing, but to, you know, and that there are billions of brain cells. So how was it discovered that, you know, the new brain cells are being generated? I mean, or is that too scientific to kind of go into, you know, on the show?
Well, no, it actually just happened as technology got better and brain imaging got better. And they could actually then, you know, most of what we know about the brain, we know from animal studies, because you can cut up an animal's brain, whereas you can't a human being.
Right.
And so they discovered that in mammals, neurogenesis happens. They discovered this in the 80s, and they wondered, no, but it couldn't possibly happen in human beings. And then finally, they were able to examine the brains of people who had recently died, and discovered that, yes, indeed, even in old age, your brain is still making new brain cells. But again, they didn't know the significance of this until they actually looked at depression. So in researching depression, what they discovered is that antidepressants, like this whole new class of antidepressants called SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, you know, for 20, 30 years now, this has been a big boon to psychiatry, because they've been the most effective ways of combating depression that any other medicine has had. It turns out that the SSRIs, they thought, worked by increasing serotonin levels. And what they discovered just maybe 10 years ago or so is that that's not how they work at all. That actually it's a myth to think that depression involves a deficiency in serotonin. And that actually the way the SSRIs work and the antidepressants work is that they stimulate neurogenesis. And when somebody is depressed, they have a low rate of neurogenesis. And what the antidepressants do is they increase that rate. And that's what brings a person out of depression. It's not the rise in serotonin. So there's this huge myth that just about everybody in America believes that if you are depressed, it means you have low serotonin and you need to take this medication that increases your serotonin levels. Well, it turns out that actually antidepressants are only effective with less than 50% of the people that take them. And what actually works is increasing the rate of neurogenesis, and there are many natural ways of increasing neurogenesis, ways that do not have the side effects of SSRIs. I mean, sometimes SSRIs are important and necessary, but they are so overprescribed in the society. It's like right now, 1 in 4 American women between 25 and 45 is on antidepressants.
Wow.
That's
amazing.
Doesn't something seem wrong with this picture? Yeah, this seems just like crazy.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing that I mean, it drives me nuts seeing the advertisements for the drugs on TV, with, you know, particularly listing the side effects and one of them being, you know, possibly being fatal. You know, to me it's like, come on, there's got to be a better way than, you know, adding what in many cases might be a toxin to our system, trying to, you know, create an out of balance condition.
That's right. And the thing is that it's the side effects which are also quite damaging. Most people who take SSRIs have a loss of libido, a loss of their sex drive. And that's pretty depressing just in itself. And the other thing that comes is that you actually get, there can be a loss of 50% of your serotonin receptors if you take SSRIs over time. So that means you get more and more dependent upon SSRIs just to maintain a normal level of serotonin. So the side effects can be quite damaging. Again, sometimes they're important to prescribe and necessary for people, and they can be lifesavers. But in general, they are so overprescribed, and the pharmaceutical companies, I mean, they are making $15 billion a year off of SSRIs. They've got a good gig going here, right? It's like cartels don't want to give up a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they are busy at work trying to find other drugs that increase neurogenesis. And when they develop them, you will hear nonstop commercials about them. But in the meantime, there are a lot of natural things, free things, that increase neurogenesis. And there are some natural things that appear to work even better than antidepressants at decreasing depression and at alleviating depression. So this whole serotonin deficiency myth is on its way out, but it's still supported by a lot of marketing, and most people still believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, to me, it's, you know, the whole, you know, pharma business, you know, aspect. To me, it's kind of like they don't want you to get healthy until they have something else, you know, like in the queue to be able to, you know, it's kind of like just to keep you dependent on whatever product it is that they offer, you know, and rather than, you know, trying to cure or, you know, to basically wean people off of, you know, off other drugs. That just sort of drives me crazy with that.
Yeah.
Well, now, so how does, you know, this new paradigm, you know, that the reality of neurogenesis, how does that change what we would think of as a healthy brain?
Good question. So it turns out what we think of as a healthy brain is actually far below what's possible and far below true health. It's suboptimal, that we are all operating at a much lower capacity than we need to. Now, again, nobody knew this until just the last few years. We've all thought that, you know, either your brain is healthy or it's unhealthy. It's diseased in some way or impaired in some way. But it turns out that the healthy brain, so-called healthy brain, is actually quite a bit below what is possible. So the approach in this book is a holistic approach, meaning body, heart, mind, spirit, that all dimensions of the brain need to be stimulated because they all work together synergistically to increase neurogenesis. So one experiment that they did a while back to see if they could increase the rate of neurogenesis, they gave mice a holistic treatment. Now, that isn't what the researchers called it. That's my word for it. What the researchers called it was an enriched environment. And an enriched environment consists of a great diet. It consisted of running wheels in which they could get exercise. It consisted of lots of new changing environments that they could explore. It consisted of nesting materials and a lot of other friendly mice that they could play with and mate with. And they found that they increased their rate of neurogenesis by 5 times. And that these mice became kind of like super mice. I mean, they had big cognitive advantages over their normal neurogenesis rate peers. They learned faster, they were smarter, and they were also protected from anxiety and depression. This protection wasn't absolute, but it was a robust emotional resilience that it conferred on these mice. And they also had heightened immunity. So they were operating at a higher level than ordinary mice are. And that's the case with all of us. That I think of this as a two-pronged approach. One is to stop doing things that slows down our rate of neurogenesis. And the other is to do things which increases our rate of neurogenesis. And that this two-pronged strategy can bring our brain health, no matter what age we're at, to a much higher level. So if we're in our 20s or 30s or 40s, we can be operating at a higher level, same in our 50s and 60s. And in old age, this also looks like it is a protection against cognitive decline and the memory loss associated with Alzheimer's. So this kind of holistic approach, body, heart, mind, spirit, it seems like all of these dimensions work together, right? Because everything we experience through the brain. If we experience something physically or emotionally or mentally or we have spiritual states, it all comes to us through the brain. And so the higher functioning our brain is, the higher our quality of life. And the lower quality of our brain, the lower quality of our life.
Yeah. So would then the, I guess, new definition of what a healthy brain would be one that has a high rate of neurogenesis?
Exactly right. That's right.
Okay.
And what's amazing is that we don't know really what's possible. This information is so new. So it turns out, for example, that a baby's rate of neurogenesis depends upon the rate of neurogenesis of its mother. So if the mother has a high rate of neurogenesis, the baby will have a high rate of neurogenesis. So what is actually possible in terms of brain health? We don't really know yet. Again, this is so new. It's going to take years and years to really find out what are the upper reaches of possibility here. What are the upper limits of the brain's capacities? It's going to take years and years to really figure this out because this rate of neurogenesis can be enhanced at a very early age. It can be enhanced in utero even.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of going to ask is, you know, when you mentioned the, you know, the mother-child, connection and rate, I was, first of all, you know, the question was it in utero? And which you mentioned, but also is it, so it's like shortly after birth, you know, kind of thing, that the rates seem to be similar, kind of?
Yeah, you know, it's really quite amazing what they've discovered recently about the impact of the state of the mother's consciousness on the baby. So if the mother is anxious, she gives birth to a baby which has, you know, we have three brains, right? We have this reptilian brain stem that runs the body. We have this mammalian limbic system, which is responsible for our emotions. And we have this neocortex, which is the most recent evolutionary development and is responsible for what we think of as human culture and civilization, the higher things in life. Well, if a mother is anxious during her pregnancy, she gives birth to a child with an enlarged reptilian brain and a smaller neocortex. And if the mother feels safe during the pregnancy, feels relaxed, taken care of, safe, then she gives birth to a baby with an enlarged neocortex and a normal-sized reptilian brain, brainstem, and limbic system. So the mother's state of consciousness has a huge impact on the uteruses, on the baby in utero's brain development, and that continues for years after birth. So if in the family there is trauma and there is fear, what happens is that this neocortex fails to develop optimally. The reptilian fight-flight survival circuits get stimulated, and those get larger. But the neocortex, and then particularly the prefrontal cortex, which are like the crown jewels of the brain, those don't develop very well. And those are the things that are responsible for things like executive function, being able to have impulse control, for deliberation, empathy, things like that. So the mother's state of consciousness and what's happening in the family has a tremendous effect on the developing brain. And it's almost like if survival is the question, then the higher functions get shut down and the lower functions, the survival circuits, get going. And so this also has a big effect on the rate of neurogenesis. So anxiety and stress lower our rates of neurogenesis. That is, particularly when it's chronic. If it's short-term and moderate, that's okay. But if it's chronic stress and chronic fear or big trauma, it slows our rate of neurogenesis way down, and the brain just doesn't develop into ways that it could possibly. Yeah, the early years are hugely important.
Yeah, so with that slowing down, I mean, once that happens, then it basically reflects outward then. I mean, then people, you know, their behaviors and attitudes toward life.
That's right.
All that kind of thing then is all of it kind of, it can be like a downward spiral in a way, you know, if that, you know, continues on in that manner, wouldn't it?
That's exactly right. That these kids get off to a start that is at a big disadvantage to other kids. And I mean, we do know that, again, there is neuroplasticity and neurogenesis, and some of this can be overcome, but it's hard to imagine all of it being overcome. I mean, the brain can heal itself, and the brain can get, can grow new brain cells, and the rate of neurogenesis can increase, and things can change, but these early deficits, it's actually unclear now to what extent they can be compensated for with later experience.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, if you have a cut, you know, it can heal, but there's a scar left. So there's something there that remains.
Yeah.
You know, that shows, you know, that there was an impact. Gosh, we're going to be taking a break shortly, so I do want to invite people, if you're listening, you can call in. If you'd like to ask Brant any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Brant, feel free to type it in, and we'll get to that after the break. Okay, just wanted to get that out. Now, you know, one of the things that, you know, you mentioned, you know, particularly with, you know, the older people, that the rate of neurogenesis can help ward off maybe some of the effects of Alzheimer's. Yeah. Now, I've had several guests on my show who either have been caregivers for those with Alzheimer's, or they themselves have it. Unfortunately, I had one gentleman who had Alzheimer's, who has it, wrote a wonderful book. It was going to be on my show, and he forgot. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, it's like, oh, no. You know, I knew that was a risk, but, you know, but he has a wonderful book. His name is Greg O'Brien. But anyway, one of the things that I read and I got from his book is the idea of a cognitive reserve, you know, that so, you know, would you mind kind of talking just a little bit more about how, you know, neurogenesis and Alzheimer's are interrelated? Because I have, again, I have quite a few people who listen to the show, who, you know, who have read these books and are really interested in, and I mean, many Americans are touched by it in some way or another. So would you mind kind of just talking just a little bit more again about neurogenesis and its connection to, you know, warding off or maybe minimizing the effects of Alzheimer's?
Yeah, yeah. This is a really important topic. And it is huge because right now a third of seniors die with either Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia. And if present trend lines continue, it looks like if people reach the age of 85, 50% will have Alzheimer's. And since most of us are expected to live to be 85, that gives each of us a 50-50 chance of developing Alzheimer's. So this is a huge problem, a really big problem. So they were doing research on people who had Alzheimer's. They were doing this one study with nuns, and they discovered that these nuns, this one particular group of nuns who were teachers, didn't have Alzheimer's. And when they looked at their brains, they discovered that actually many of them had as much of this amyloid beta plaque in their brains as the Alzheimer's people did, but they didn't show any symptoms of it. And so it got them wondering, well, why was that so? And so they began to realize that if you use your brain during your life, like teachers do, or like professionals do, or like many business people do who do complex operations in their minds, if you use your mind, then you build up something called cognitive reserve, which are like these alternate pathways in your brain. So that if you do get a toxic buildup of plaque, your brain has other ways of connecting and operating, sort of like the internet. There's many different pathways to get a message through. So it turns out that using your mind, using your brain, learning new things, increases your rate of neurogenesis. It's one of the things. It's one of the strategies, right? Which is the body, heart, mind, spirit approach. And so at the level of mind, what we want to do is we want to be learning new things. We want to be lifelong learners. So that means at every age, we want to be reading, writing, listening to music, exposing ourselves to new things. We want to be learning new things, whether that's through a class or whether that's over the web with a webinar or learning a new language or discussing a movie with friends. Like we want to use different parts of our mind. We want to be learning new things. We want to be discussing things. We want to be processing things. We want to use our brain in a variety of ways. And that's the problem with some of the, like, video games, computer games, like doing crossword puzzles. Those kind of activities are helpful for that particular activity, but it doesn't appear that it generalizes to other functions of the brain. Mm. So many of these ads we hear about for, like, computer increase, it turns out that the research is showing that they aren't very effective for anything other than doing that particular computer game. You get better at that computer game, but it doesn't seem to generalize. So we need a wide variety of cognitive stimulation, of using our mind, like cross-training our mind in a variety of ways.
So it's kind of like, you know, when you talked about, you know, the different pathways that the brain creates, building that cognitive reserve. It's like those particular activities, the you know, the games and the crossword puzzles, those are kind of using the same already established pathways. So there's really nothing new being created.
Yeah, or it can increase those pathways. It can increase neuroplasticity along those pathways. But again, it just doesn't generalize to other functions of the brain. Like, it doesn't increase working memory, or it doesn't increase attention.
Mm.
Like, for these, we need a wide variety of mental forms of stimulation.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, gosh, okay, we're going to go ahead and we're at the halftime, so I want to take our quick break. And then when we return, I kind of want to move into, we can talk about, you know, the holistic approach, you know, to brain health, and then talking a little bit more maybe about some of those things that we can do to increase, as well as some of those things that we definitely want to do to, or we want to eliminate that decrease the neurogenesis.
Very good.
Okay, so, okay, so everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great, all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Dr. Brant Courtwright, and he is author of The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, Upgrade Your Brain, Upgrade Your Life. And again, you can find out more about Brant by visiting one of two websites. One is his website, BrantCourtwright.com, and the other one, specific to the book, is called NeurogenesisDiet.com. And again, I do have a direct link to both websites in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Brant.
Yes, hi.
Okay, great. All right. I want to make sure I didn't lose you there. All right. Well, okay, let's go ahead and, you know, you mentioned a few times during the first half of the show the body, heart, mind, and spirit aspect. So I am assuming that, you know, those four areas of attention go into what you would consider a holistic approach to brain health.
That's right. That it turns out that if we stimulate neurogenesis along one particular pathway, it doesn't have as powerful effect as if we stimulate all four pathways together, body, heart, mind, spirit. So, for example, doing aerobic exercise of various kinds is a big boost to neurogenesis. The brain just kind of explodes with new neurons when you do aerobic exercise. Aerobic exercise is anything to get you breathing fast. So running, walking quickly, biking, swimming, fast dancing, cross-training, hiking up a mountain, anything that gets you breathing hard is aerobic. Doing things like yoga is great for the body, but it doesn't have much effect on neurogenesis rates. Other exercises are helpful, good for the body, but they don't seem to increase our rate of neurogenesis. But aerobic exercise is very powerful at jump-starting our rate of neurogenesis. However, of all those neurons that are born, that are produced, about half of them die within a month. They're pruned by the brain, unless we do other things. So, for example, exposure to new environments increases the survival rate of new brain cells. So doing new things, or travel, or taking a walk in the woods, getting a complex sensory environment that changes, has a big effect on our rate of neurogenesis, not by increasing the rate, but by increasing the survival of the new neurons. So in a holistic approach, all these things work together synergistically, that any one thing may be helpful, but it has to work with other things in order to get the full effect. So this is a body, heart, mind, spirit approach, and there's also there's a chapter on each one of those and the different things we can do or not do to promote neurogenesis. And there's a special chapter on diet, because diet is also a hugely important factor in the brain's health and rate of neurogenesis.
Wow.
So
okay,
well,
I'm
sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I was just going to say, you know, with the aerobic, you know, is being a good way to create, to generate the new brain cells.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating that the brain prunes back, you know, some of those. Is it one of those that the brain kind of identifies and only keeps what is working or kind of...
That's part of it, yes. It seems like
okay.
That's part of it, but they don't entirely know why.
Okay.
I mean, these are brand new brain cells, and some of them haven't even, like, come online yet, and it's unclear why the brain eliminates so many of them, unless we do something else to increase their survival rate. Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you say heart, you know, of the body, heart, mind, spirit.
Yes.
Are you speaking emotion versus pumping heart? Okay.
That's right. By heart, I mean, that's shorthand for our emotional brain, for the part of us that is involved with relationships and feels good or feels bad. So certain emotional states that are become chronic lower our rate of neurogenesis. So a chronic state of anxiety, a chronic state of stress, as well as depression, the rate of neurogenesis slows way, way down in those conditions. And, you know, we live in such a stressful society these days. Stress just seems to be, like, nonstop. Now, there's good stress and there's bad stress. So good stress is like moderate stress, and it's fairly short-term stress. But we need a certain amount of stress in order to get stronger, just like with exercise. With exercise, we are stressing our muscles. They break down, and then they build up, and they become stronger. But if we exercise all the time, we just erode the muscles, and they don't build up. It's the same with stress. With good stress, meaning moderate stress or short-term stress, We need that kind of challenge, that kind of emotional challenge. It brings forth new capacities in us. And it also actually stimulates neurogenesis. It's almost like the brain says, wait, something's going on here. We need to figure this out. And so neurogenesis gets stimulated with moderate stress and with short-term stress. But with long-term stress or with very intense traumatic stress, neurogenesis slows to a crawl. It's like the brain just, it's like it gives up in the face of just overwhelming stress. And the same is true of depression. In depression, our rate of neurogenesis is very, very slow. You know, it's almost like in depression, the brain does as it feels. It just kind of slows way down and moves into this kind of just gray, numb feeling. Certain emotional states increase or decrease our rate of neurogenesis. If we are feeling joy, if we're feeling engaged by life, loving relationships stimulate neurogenesis. I mean, in some ways, this shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. This is like common sense, but it's interesting that science now confirms this. That good, healthy relationships are good for our brain. And stressful relationships, anxiety-producing relationships, bullying relationships are bad for our brain. They decrease our rate of neurogenesis.
Yeah. Well, you know, and to me, it's wonderful the science that kind of brings it all together, you know, to be able to, because I think, you know, many of these things, you know, you say, I mean, we've known the, you know, what a particular environment, you know, how it can, you know, demonstrated in our life, you know, but exactly what is kind of behind the scenes, you know, the neurogenesis aspect, you know, those were the things that weren't known. And, you know, it's good, I think it's good and hopeful to know that, you know, these are things that you can manage and you can improve, you know, that you're not condemned to a particular, you know, rate of growth or not growth as far as the cells. That
would
be
right.
Yeah. Now, the mind and spirit, the mind, is that the aspect you talk about, the enriched environment in a way, like the mice had, as far as, you know, great things to do, you know, people around you, that kind of thing. Is that, or what would the mind aspect?
So the mind is one part of an enriched environment. Other healthy mice to play with would be like the emotional part. Basically it means like learning new things, like we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
Being engaged. You know, there's a cognitive decline that most people experience at two points in their lives. One is after they graduate from college, and the other is after they retire. There's an actual measurable decline cognitively that many people experience that, except for those people who, after they graduate from college, go into a job or a school situation where they continue to use their mind. They don't experience a cognitive decline then. Same with people who retire. Those who retire but continue to get some kind of mental stimulation don't experience a cognitive decline. But many people just go and start playing golf and forget about their mind, and there's a cognitive drop-off that's fairly rapid that follows that. So we need this kind of ongoing cognitive stimulation. It's like the brain wants to be stimulated. It wants kind of optimal stimulation. Too little stimulation, and neurogenesis slows down. Too much stimulation, and the brain slows down. We need an optimal engagement with the world. It's almost like the brain wants us to engage with the world. Is our capacities, our potentials, our abilities, that stimulates the brain, stimulates neurogenesis. We feel good. We become who we are in that process.
kind of like a Goldilocks zone of engagement.
That's right. But, that's right.
Okay. Wow. Very interesting. And now, spirit, is that how does that fit into the picture?
Yeah, well, it turns out that it appears as if there's a couple of types of spiritual practice that seem to stimulate neurogenesis. And there's two practices in particular that have been investigated that there's a lot of research evidence to show that neurogenesis seems to increase. Now, when they first started doing brain imaging studies and studying meditation, they didn't expect to see much, right? They thought that, I mean, it looks like just the person sitting there and nothing's happening. But if you actually meditate, you realize that actually meditation is a very dynamic state. There's a lot going on in the brain there. So there's two particular types of spiritual practice or meditation practice that appear to increase our rate of neurogenesis. The first is different forms of mindfulness meditation. And mindfulness meditation is the process of coming into the here and now. There's many different varieties of this. One common form is paying attention to the breath, just paying attention to the very subtle sensations in the body of the breath coming in and going out and pausing and coming in and going out. There are other forms of mindfulness practice where you just pay attention to whatever arises in consciousness and you simply observe it. You witness it arising and then passing away and watching the next thing arise, whether it's a thought or a feeling or a sensation or a memory or a desire. You simply watch all of it. There's other types as well, but they all have in common this training of attention and focusing upon the here and now, bringing us into the present moment. That seems to have a profound effect on our rate of neurogenesis. The other type of spiritual practice that seems to also have a big effect is devotional practices, devotional prayer or compassion practices or bhakti practices, heart-opening practices in essence, practices that open to our inner soul or spirit, to this deep source of love and compassion for all beings. Those kind of practices also seem to have, again, this profound effect on neurogenesis along the entire hippocampus. And so those two practices have been investigated more than any others and appear to be quite powerful for enhancing our brain function.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I love, you know, that mindful practices. To me, you know, the idea of being present, what it does is it really helps take away stresses of past, you know, and future, you know, that kind of thing. So by being present, that really does. Okay, well, great. Now, gosh, we're down to
about 10
minutes.
That's right.
It's also
a form of stress reduction, too.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that's right, that meditation is also a form of stress reduction. So it also helps on this emotional level as well. That's right.
Absolutely. So we got about 10 minutes, so I kind of would like to talk just a little bit more. You mentioned the importance of diet, you know, in keeping our brains sharp. And so are there any, like, good foods and bad foods when it comes towards with regards to, okay, what would they be?
Just good. Well, just a few. Right? So in the book, I go into 30 or 40 different nutrients that stimulate our rate of neurogenesis. So let me just mention a few of them here, as well as also saying some of the things that decrease our rate of neurogenesis. So one thing that has a powerful effect on decreasing our rate of neurogenesis is eating unhealthy fats. So the brain is made up of about two-thirds fat. And so to get a healthy brain, we need to eat a lot of good, healthy fats, but we need to not eat unhealthy fats. So like if you want to build a good high-end house, you use good lumber and good high-quality material. You don't use decayed wood or rotting wood. It's the same with the brain. There's much in the current, not only American diet, but the diet of most cultures that includes a lot of unhealthy fats. And by unhealthy fats, what I mean is oxidized fats. And oxidized fats, meaning fats that become rancid, either through heat or through exposure to oxygen. So cooking in vegetable oil, for example, produces a lot of oxidized fats. Nobody should be cooking in vegetable oil. You know, the American public has been told to cook in vegetable oil now for several decades. It's one of the most neurotoxic things you can do is cook in vegetable oil. What you want to cook with is with saturated fats, with things like coconut oil, with butter, or even better is ghee, clarified butter, or even tallow or lard. You don't want to use vegetable oil because they oxidize just like that. And when oxidized fats, when you consume them and they enter into your bloodstream, what they do is they oxidize fats in your bloodstream. They oxidize cholesterol in your bloodstream. And it's this that produces heart disease and inflammation. And inflammation chews up the inside of our blood vessels. And it slows neurogenesis way, way down also. We want to eat an anti-inflammatory diet, a low inflammatory diet, not this pro-inflammatory diet that most people are eating. The other big thing is sugar. If you eat a high sugar diet, you can slow your rate of neurogenesis down 50%. That's huge. Wow. That's just gigantic. And when you think about the average American child, what they have for breakfast, you know, sugar, frosted flakes, glass of orange juice, it's just like pure sugar and bad fats. And the effect that this is having on their brain is not good. So what we want is we want a lot of good, healthy fats, things like avocados, nuts, grass-fed beef and meat, pastured eggs, pastured dairy products, whole milk from pasture-raised cows, wild-caught fish. You know, I said that the brain is about two-thirds fat. Well, of that fat, one-third of the brain's fat is DHA. And DHA is one of the three omega-3 fatty acids that we find in fish oil. So we want a diet that has plenty of DHA in it. So most people can't get this enough through just eating fish. They need to do fish oil supplements. And so what you want is a fish oil supplement that has a high DHA content to it and is also molecularly distilled. Because unless it's molecularly distilled, it's likely to have a bunch of mercury in it. And mercury is one of the most potent carcinogens that exists. It's terrible for the brain. The brain just shrivels with mercury.
Wow. Wow.
So we want good, healthy fats, including good omega-3s as well. They did one study, and they looked at people who ate fish 1 to 3 times a week, and they found out they had 14% more gray matter, more brain cells, in the part of their brain responsible for higher cognitive functions, unless they ate fried fish. If they ate fried fish, there was no difference between them and normals. So fried food means that the fats get oxidized, and it's terrible for your brain. I mean, I hate to say this because I used to love fish and chips.
I know.
I still love fish and chips, but I just don't eat it anymore. It's not good for the brain.
Wow. My goodness. Well, gosh, we're down to the last few minutes here. This has really been great. I do want to let people know that in your book you have basically a program to enhance your whole brain. It deals with diet, body, heart, mind, and spirit. Also, there's a chapter on putting it all together toward living a neurogenic lifestyle. So it's definitely a good read in for people to be able to take an active approach in increasing the rate of neurogenesis now that we know that this happens. So is there any maybe final words or anything maybe that we didn't cover that you really wanted to make sure that the listening audience kind of gets to know before we close, Brent?
I would just say one last good thing to eat is blueberries.
Ah,
blueberries are like a miracle grow for your brain. The brain just takes off. Blueberries are antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and they really increase your rate of neurogenesis. That's another just nice thing for everybody to know. But there's many other things they can be doing as well.
Well, this is great. This has been a fascinating conversation. I knew it would be, and I'm really thankful that you spent the time chatting with us and talking about neurogenesis. I'm really looking forward to seeing how science catches up with, you know, products and how we can maybe raise awareness about it.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on and for helping spread the word about neurogenesis.
Well, it is my pleasure. And now, are you on social media?
I'm on Facebook and Twitter, yes.
Okay, Facebook and Twitter. I will make sure that we connect through that so I can kind of follow your journey there as well. And then for those listeners who use those platforms, definitely join Brent on Facebook and Twitter. So, well, anyway, Brent, I'm really looking forward to keeping in touch and learning more. And hopefully I'll get my rate pumped up a little bit from what I've learned today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Brent Courtwright, and he is author of The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, Upgrade Your Brain, Upgrade Your Life. And again, you can find out more about Brent by visiting his website, brentcourtwright.com. And also, you can find out more information about the book and purchase the book. And I appreciate you supporting our guests by purchasing their books by visiting his website, which is neogenesisdiet.com. And again, I do have direct links to both websites in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.